Welcome, everyone. I'm Dan Roberts, and our guest presenter this month is Dr. Tracy Williams from the Spectrios Institute for Low Vision. Dr. Williams is an optometrist and low vision specialist. He's a frequent national and international lecturer in the field of low vision rehabilitation and also participates in annual mission trips to third world countries. He's well known for his comprehensive head, heart, and eyes approach to low vision rehabilitation for people with vision loss. He's a very busy man, obviously. He's become a very good friend of mine as we've worked on committees together, and we've had some very good talks about low vision rehabilitation, and I'm very happy that he's here with us today.
Hi, Dan. It's a real pleasure being with you, and I've admired your wonderful mission, and I want to thank you for that introduction.
The head, heart, and eyes approach, I think, is something that we all need to hear, that there are doctors out there who are thinking this direction, that we are more than just our eyeballs. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. Dr. Williams, from your perspective, what are the elements that lead to successful low-vision rehabilitation outcomes for us?
Well, I think the thing that I learned at a very early stage in my professional career, and a lot of times not just working with extremely gifted low-vision rehabilitation practitioners, but working with people who had vision loss, was how important it is to work truly on the head, heart, and eyes. And I think especially when you think of the two sides of the fence, one side of the fence is the medical side, where, of course, you find out what's my definitive diagnosis, what's the etiology or cause this problem to happen, and what is my future, what is my prognosis. But if a person indeed has a permanent vision loss, the next step is low vision rehabilitation. If there's any vision that they can possibly maximize, that's the next bridge that they have to cross. And I think what's different in the rehabilitation model is, number one, we have perhaps more time to work with the person and try to give as much education as we possibly can. Number two, we are going to try every possible effort to maximize the vision and any other abilities that that person has. And finally, to motivate and get the individual not to be the victim of the vision loss, but to hopefully be the goodwill ambassador. You know, I think too, Dan, that you are very, very lucky if you can find the way to afford a model where you can have a multidisciplinary team approach, where you can actually get people that have the credentials.
And I'm sure you would both agree that the patient is a big part of that, actually part of the staff, and needs to be educated in these procedures as well, and how to cross that, what you call the bridge between vision and low vision, and vision techniques and devices, and low vision and non-visual techniques and devices. Would you agree that the patient is just as much a part of that team as you are?
Your center must be a consumer-driven center. I think on one hand, the term that we like to use is professional paternalism, meaning that we, with the training and the books we've read and the experience we have, our job, like a parent, is to share all this experience, to share this knowledge, so that the patient can take ownership of their own individual rehabilitation plan. So you're absolutely, Dan, that's so correct that we are a consumer-driven center.
Okay, I think maybe we ought to go ahead and just start with the head. Do you think we can start at the top and work our way down to the whatever the eyes, I guess? What does the person with vision loss need to know, need to learn, and need to do to relate to maximizing their remaining vision and their other abilities?
It's a very powerful thing, I think, if when you come and meet with a doctor, that the doctor really has a plan to spend some time, hopefully in sort of Andy of Mayberry language, talk about what is wrong with the eyes, but what's also working with those eyes. I think when people realize the parts of their eyes that still function, then maybe like Apollo 13, we can begin to work with the parts we still have to try to be as independent and be able to do quality of life pursuits. I think that also there's sort of a bonding or sort of a friendship and rapport when you have the chance to interchange both the person with the vision loss but the doctor. Each has a chance to talk and each has a chance to listen. And I think that one of the things that's important with me is I really do like to listen to what the person's goals are. Are they a person that really misses a lot of near-point tasks, for example? Or they might be a person that hardly does anything up close. It's all distant types of activities. I think that's a very important thing. And then I think for people with vision loss, they do to some extent, I think, have to have some trust and be willing to learn. I think a person does come into this not just expecting a simple pair of glasses, but expecting a good experience, you know, so, an experience that you learn and grow. And this is not a quick vignette, you know, slam dunk thing. This is an ongoing process and hopefully a really good experience. So I think working on the head is really inviting the person with vision loss to learn as much as they possibly can and hopefully having good teachers surrounding them that are constantly seeing potential in them and trying to lift them as high as they can go.
Excellent. What about the heart? How do you motivate people and help them move forward with their lives despite vision loss? That is one of the most difficult parts of this, is to move forward once we've reached the age of 60 or 70. We feel like, you know, maybe that was supposed to be our goal, and now we find that we have to make a whole new life for ourselves as a low-vision person. How do you help motivate people to do that, to energize them?
What's really helped me a great deal, because I'm fortunate, at least to this point, to have good 20/20 vision, but I have to tell you, when I work on a team where my other teammates don't have 20/20 corrected vision, and I sort of learn what their challenges are, I see how they cope, the things that they do, it's so inspirational for me to be able to have even stronger conviction when I'm trying to encourage people that I see every single day. In other words, I think some of the patients that come here are thinking, boy, my vision is really terrible and I can't do this and that. I can say that as the doctor component of it, I get back to that saying I said before, being able to see potential in people when maybe no one else can, and that even might be the person with vision loss. When you work in this field, like I have, I hate to admit it, about 25 to 30 years now, you have seen so many different lives change. You've seen so many people start at point A and climb the mountain to point B. You realize that people can do so much more, but maybe you're that one authoritative voice that says, you can. So I think, as far as the heart goes, I think seeing people that are successful, so I think that's a key. Second of all, working with a staff that has realized this and being that sort of tough, loving advocate in the foxhole. In other words, we never want to push anyone too hard. But on the other hand, I have to tell you that I think many of the people that we work with, after a while, when they see our hearts in the right way, a place, and see the directions and the creativity and the tools and on, they go, you know, this isn't so bad. You know, this is. I think I am going to have to gut out some of this. I'm going to have to think about this. If I'm the matriarch or the patriarch of the family, what example am I showing to the rest of the family? I have to think about, you know, how can I be that person that I was before where I was giving? I want to get back into that mode. And if I have to do that by learning and growing and really being concerned about what's my attitude, am I the horse that's led up to water that's going to drink or not? One of the things we also do here is we see about 350 children, K through 12th grade. And it is a common thing, especially with our teens, that a lot of them feel that if they have vision loss, they're less of a person. And it's a very common saying or message that we send out there. You aren't defined by your sight. You're defined by your head and heart. And I think that's so true, Dan.
And what I'm hearing at the basis of all this is that you guys, you listen to the patient. You say that a lot, that you listen to the patient. And I know that takes time. You mentioned tools earlier. Many years ago, probably before I met you, you mentioned a toolbox for people with vision loss to seek out the right tools to help them with their vision. Tell me about this approach to working with the eyes, Dr. Williams.
Well, Dan, I think that sometimes if you think of this thought, when you have vision loss, at least in the past, you may have been so fortunate that one pair of glasses did it all. It would help you see at far, arm's length, or up close to read. But as many people with vision loss learn, you need to almost have special tools to match up at the task at hand. If it's a distant task, well, yes, there might be distant conventional lenses that help you see. But then again, you might need to have some form of a telescope. You might have special glasses that have telescopes in the top, or you might have a handheld monocular. Telescopes can be very helpful to help a person spot things better at far. On the other hand, maybe a person is trying to get their reading speed as good as possible. They may be fortunate that they can get stronger reading glasses or a stronger bifocal than they had before, and they learn to hold things closer, favoring their better seeing eye with good lighting coming over the shoulder of the better seeing eye. Or maybe they need a prescription handheld magnifier, or maybe they simply need to get something that can blow the print up or large print text, or perhaps they need adaptive or assistive technology, electronic magnification to help them see. But as you hear me talk, you're hearing several tools. So like an apprentice carpenter who's just starting off, that carpenter may not have all the right tools to build the houses or the other things that he or she needs to accomplish. So I think you have to understand, if you have vision loss, you're probably going to have to learn new strategies, which includes specific tools, specific environmental setup. There's going to be some strategies and thinking and some adaptive training going into making the most out of your sight. But the bottom line is, there seems to always be a solution. There seems to be a way. It just, what again is important is the person's attitude. Well, doctor, if I've got to get the steel out of my arms, I've got to hold things closer, I'll do it. Because you know what? I want to do it myself. Or doctors, and I have to hold it 2 inches in front of my best seeing eye, even though after a while there might be ink constantly on the end of my nose, or my nose might get flat after a while on the tip, that's okay, because I'm independent and I had no chance of seeing before, but with this tool I can see. And as far as reading goes, who cares if you have a gadget, you know, that you have to turn on and you can set it up perfectly and go from there. But let's not also forget, you can get vision from your ears and from your fingertips.
You mentioned that the patient has to, of course, be the driving force in this, but there are also people involved in with that patient and in their lives. So another term I've heard you use in the past is the coach, being present during the low vision rehabilitation experience, meaning the wife or the caregiver. And so would you please elaborate on that concept, Dr. Williams?
Again, I've learned that we see that our success in working with people in the low vision rehabilitation program seems to be greatly enhanced if the individual brings along a significant other. Now, that significant other could be their spouse, it could be their siblings, it could be a good friend. But the bottom line is, having an individual that you love sitting in the room gives you an extra set of ears. It also, whether the person with vision loss realizes this or not, if it's family members, for example, your children, they might be saying in their own minds, will I have to cross this bridge someday myself? And also, sometimes when we talk on the phone with our family or friends and we have vision loss, maybe in this culture they think you're either blind or have 20/20. So if you have a person, a loved one there who can watch what's going on, who can listen to some of the discussions, I think it's shared knowledge that's very powerful, because that loved one is going to be, I think, a dynamic support person, sort of your own support group going home. And so we have found that when we have a coach, so to speak, who's there, we've actually, we empower this person, of course, with the blessing of the patient, but we give them a notepad, a pen, and I think it makes it very engaging. I think afterwards, like if they had a morning session with us, when they go out to lunch, a lot of things that may have been said may have not always been captured by each person, but sometimes with a team of two, it gets captured.
There are some, of course, some traits that we've talked about copability here a lot, and that is the characteristics that a person has themselves as for making changes and getting involved with low vision process, and that is what we need for success, I believe, as well. What are the traits and characteristics or abilities needed in a person with vision loss, in your opinion, to successfully participate in a low vision program such as you're describing?
Let's talk about with maybe the title of Don't Worry About, okay? Don't worry about if you have enough money. I think a lot of times people are so worried about that. It's not that there aren't financial issues. You have to pay to go through the low vision program, and certainly you got to pay to get these devices. Now, sometimes you can work with different groups where they can help find funding. And you simply have to say to yourself, look, if that's what I need to do, that's what I need to do. I think a person that's been giving all of their life, that's sometimes very hard to accept or to move in that direction. But I would say two things. You have to move in that direction so you can get back to the direction you enjoyed going before. And also remember how good it made you feel when you were able to help or do something for someone else. So I think having that sort of attitude. I think, too, don't worry about some of the fears that you might have. I think you'll probably find out going through the low vision rehabilitation process that there's many more things that you can grow and gain from than fall back on. I think that it's one of these deals where you just got to stick your toes into the water. Hopefully it's something you want to do, but I'm just saying, don't be afraid. I think another thing too is don't worry about making these types of mistakes that we see people all the time that are afraid because when they eat they might not be able to eat as well at first as they did before, or they might make the wrong choices and on, but I'm just saying the only way you're going to get better is if you stick with it and try. And there is such a warm feeling I think our staff gets when we do indeed see a person that is the unsinkable Molly Brown, that has a good sense of humor, and is the type of person that just says to themselves, you know, I'm still here, so I'm going to get better. So come on in. And plus, one last thing I would say is we do have patients we feel are dragged in here by the coaches, so to speak. Maybe the person doesn't want to be here, but the loved one just can't stand watching what's going on and the suffering, and just feels that, you know, I just have to have it happen. Well, sometimes that vision isn't so good for our staff, that the person just is like stubborn and doesn't want to do anything. But number one, I think then the coach does gain something. They see exactly what the opportunities are, and certainly our door is always left open. And I would tell you that one trait of the professional staff should be that they have a sense of humor and thick skin. I'll turn it back to you, Dan.
Okay, that does bring us to the end of my questions. And just a couple more comments. Anything that you want to wrap up with? I think you've given us a lot to think about, and this is going to be a session that's going to have to be listened to more than once, I think. Dr. Williams?
Dan, I the one thing I'd just say is that if you have vision loss, I think you can do better. And it's just like me, when I look in the mirror every day, I'd have to say I can do better too. Keep on trying to work with fine groups like yours, Dan, and find out, you know, where you can go or what you can do, what you can listen to. I think there's some very exciting things going on, and just encourage people never to give up.